Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Immigration Lawyers Association's podcast entitled Texas SB 4, What You Need to Know to Advise Your Clients. I'm Becca Miller, AILA's Education Assistant, and it's my pleasure to introduce today's panel. The discussion leader for this podcast is Bill Stock, the AILA President of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Joining Bill are Faye Colley of Austin, Texas, and Ruby Powers of Houston, Texas. And at this time, I'd like to turn the podcast over to Bill.
Thanks very much. And we're going to start with just a real basic discussion about SB 4, kind of the 10,000-foot overview of where it is. Faye, can you just, first off, I guess it really is aimed at state-level enforcement of federal immigration law, right?
That's correct, Bill. The bill has a lot of different provisions and went through a lot of different iterations. But in its essence, it sort of maintained some important, the same sort of, important points that the governor wanted to include in the bill, including a provision that's sort of now been labeled the Texas version of Show Me Your Papers, which prohibits local entities and campus police departments from the... And this is a little weird because it's different than Arizona, but that they may not adopt, enforce, endorse a policy that prohibits or limits the enforcement of immigration law.
So they're trying. So it takes an aim at kind of the policies of the departments, really. So, I mean, for those of us who aren't from Texas, it seems this kind of thing happens in a lot of Texas communities, correct? That state police will be going ahead and asking for immigration status if they're cleaning up after a car accident or stop someone for a busted taillight, right?
Right. So I think the important point is that this bill doesn't change necessarily what police already can do, right? It doesn't mandate that they inquire into immigration status, but the bill is so expansive and large that it's going to cause sort of confusion as to what happens. In terms of your point, I think this portion of the bill was directed at localities like Austin, where we had a sheriff who was elected on a platform of, saying we're not going to enforce detainers except for XYZ for the most, immigration detainers except for the most heinous of crimes, felony offenses. And the language of this bill is meant to target those localities specifically.
Okay, so we have the, states can't, or localities can't have policies that prohibit their police from enforcing immigration law. We have this requirement that the cities and counties cooperate with detainers. Any other significant parts of the law?
Well, there's definitely more. I just wanted to point out that local entity isn't just sort of the police officers. It's all the special, the attorneys, district attorneys. It can be any employee of any division. So it's really meant to also kind of go after your city councils and other, it can be any special division department in any county or municipality. So it's very broad in that way. The other portion I think that's important to remember, aside from, the mandatory detainer thing, let's talk about that for a second. The bill requires that local entities honor immigration detainers, which of course is a voluntary. It's not a mandatory program at the federal level, and so there's several preemption concerns with regard to that.
Okay. So, and are there any exceptions from the kind of who has to comply? So campus police departments, I understand, are specifically listed, but anybody who's maybe excluded from this?
Well, there are hospitals and school districts are excluded. Also, if you are a church or a religious organization that hires a police officer, those officers are not required to comply with the bill. But it doesn't protect sort of sanctuaries, so churches themselves, or courthouses, which is a big concern here in Texas and other places where you have had ICE sort of show up at local courthouses.
Okay.
Pick folks up. Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the other sort of interesting thing is when we come to the legal challenges piece, which we will in just a second, it kind of takes away the ability of states to defend their own lawsuits or to enter into consent decrees that would stop them from participating with immigration detainers, right? How does it do that?
Well, that's an interesting point. In El Paso in particular, that's one of the lawsuits that was filed. They are under a federal settlement in order to, that purposely prohibits them from racial profiling. And this bill, seems to conflict with that. It conflicts with local entities being able to make decisions in terms of enforcement priorities across the board. And it takes sort of that decision out of their hands. Because if, for example, a local entity decides, even for a temporary period, we have, a natural disaster crisis that we need to focus on. And we need everyone to focus on evacuation. We are not going to focus on any other sort of, issues because this is an emergency. And does that constitute a violation of SB 4? Arguably it would. Or in any other context, So that's sort of the issue, I think, at a local level of taking away the power from local entities and municipalities to make their decisions. Mm-hmm.
And then I understand it also says that the state attorney general is going to defend any lawsuit which claims that SB 4 caused a city to violate somebody's constitutional rights, right? So any of these detainer lawsuits now, the state attorney general's office is going to sweep in and the city won't be able to defend itself. It'll be the AG that does the defending.
Right, if they're trying to comply with SB 4, if they're found to, on their face, making a good faith effort to comply, then they will be defended. Otherwise, the bill also strips sovereign immunity for those same officials who may fail, who may decide not to honor all detainer requests, or who may be honoring a detainer request but be found in violation, for example, keeping folks for over a 48-hour period, or as in accordance with a recent case out of San Antonio that found detainers unconstitutional. So what happens if, we have a local sheriff who decides they want to follow the Constitution, and the name of that case is Julio Trujillo Santoyo v. Bexar County, which I will say was litigated by our firm. And so what if a local entity says, I think that detainers are unconstitutional, so I can't comply. Well, this bill, which goes into effect in September 1st, allows those local officials to be sued and to complaints to be filed against them, and will not defend them, for failure to comply with detainers. It kind of goes both ways. It's a terrible result, and it puts local law enforcement in a pickle.
Thanks, Faye. Now, Ruby, I know there's a bunch of challenges going on. Can you walk us through really just sort of what are the theories on which these lawsuits are being brought right now?
Okay. So Governor Abbott signed it into law on May 7th, and on May 9th, the city of El Cencio in Texas and Maverick County, in conjunction with LULAC, filed a complaint, one of the first lawsuits against it, and then also San Antonio, the cities of San Antonio, Austin, and Dallas have consolidated a complaint, a lawsuit, with the help of MALDEF, and this is consolidated in Bexar County, which is located in San Antonio. Also, Houston City Council is going to be meeting soon to decide if they're going to join in on the lawsuit as well. Some of the issues that are discussed are things about preemption, it's too vague, Fourth Amendment violations, even Tenth Amendment violations. There's all different types of aspects that are listed. Faye and I have seen this through lots of different phases over the last several months, and it's been modified, but many AILA members did testify against it and brought the reasons why it's going to be challenged, and it's still, the language is still in the final bill. And I think it's very ripe for a lot of litigation on many fronts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's multiple things. These are being brought mostly in state court or in federal court?
Federal court.
Federal, right. It's the Western District of Texas, the San Antonio Division, is where Elsencio filed. And I believe that's the same for San Antonio's lawsuit as well.
Okay.
A lot of the cities have combined under the San Antonio lawsuit, so...
So it'll be more of a almost a class action. So and it's very early, right? So we still don't have any kinds of injunction hearings or that hasn't even been settled yet in terms of just how quickly these cases are likely to move.
Well,
right.
I think that the San Antonio court has actually set a date, hasn't it, for a preliminary hearing at the end of June? And that's the same judge that made the decision in the San Antonio v. Bexar County decision on the unconstitutionality of detainers. So. There's a fast track here to getting at least a decision or a hearing for injunctive purposes.
Okay. I mean, just if you had to handicap it, it does seem like this is an issue of, the state directing its municipalities how to do things. Do you see the chance of success here? Is this a new reality that the court may not be able to adequately remedy?
I don't think there's a lot of case law on it. I mean, we had to kind of look back to anti-commandeering laws and lawsuits, and it's not very clear. It's more clear from the federal level going to state, but not from a state level going to local entities. So I think that that's going to be something that's going to need to be teased out in litigation.
Yeah, I mean that is the biggest issue. I think the Arizona Supreme Court case, of course, said that the challenge was really too early, that it did not foreclose the idea that some of these state laws might cause an as-applied constitutional violation. If someone was stopped for perception that they were undocumented, that might taint the stop, but that they were unwilling to say it was a prima facie case. And mm-hmm. here again, because you don't have the federalism concern that you do, it seemed to me, unless there's some law under the Texas law of municipalities that people can point to, maybe a tough road in federal court against these, which really means we have to shift our focus to what's the political solution, right? Clearly this law is part of the national conversation that's happening around immigration and the role of state law enforcement and the executive orders that the president has passed, has put into effect, and the way the reins have been taken off the ICE to, be very aggressive in terms of its enforcement of immigration law. And, just shortly ago, we had the director of ICE saying that any person who's in the United States without documentation needed to be looking over their shoulder. So it's definitely a national mood that seems to be captured in this SB4. But I think, that there are also national efforts to push back on these kinds of laws. AILA, of course, has made its own statement about, what it thinks of SB4. It's decided to pull the conference for next year out of Texas, because we wanted to make a statement about the fact that our members don't support these kinds of laws, and many of our members from around the country don't want to come to Texas and spend their money in a state that would pass a law like this. So that was pretty clearly heard and considered by the Board of Governors in making that decision. And AILA actually, as a result of that, has been asked to give evidence and will be participating as a witness in some of these law firm suits to show the economic impact of the decision that that was made here. So, AILA will continue to support the folks in Texas on the ground in every way that we can. Now, Faye, I understand there is a special session of the legislature that's coming back. Do you think that SB4 may be reconsidered, similar to what happened to the some of the bathroom bills in North Carolina, where they might back away from it?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I don't think that the political reality is that we have enough sort of built up opposition or pressure on our state legislature to get the bill reconsidered during special session. But I think that is a call to action that we should consider and make, along with sort of other actions that local, you know, ALA members can take as this bill goes into effect.
Okay.
And I'd like to thank ALA for their, you know, support for us, because this is definitely an amplifier bill of those federal bills, and it's appropriate and good that ALA's has made some decisive moves.
Definitely. I think it's definitely part of our mission to advocate for good policies that are fair to everybody in the United States, including people without documents. So. So let's just kind of finally close with a quick discussion about, you know, things are developing so fast. What do we tell clients? There's obviously the whole suite of issues around knowing your rights and not opening the door to people who don't have a warrant, and what's the difference between an ICE warrant and a judicial warrant. But I guess I'd really ask, I guess, Faye, you first to kind of, you know, comment, what are you telling people on the ground right now?
Sure. I think that exactly what you identified is kind of what we're focusing on, for people to really understand what their rights are. And it will vary from locality to locality. So, for example, in Austin, there's a clear policy to not to inquire its immigration status. And so if an individual, shows their matricula consular or admits to not having a driver's license, the inquiry shouldn't go any further. But in other cities and localities, that is a tip-off, or can be a tip-off to, presumptively, that individual may or may not have status, and sort of start the process of getting ICE involved and increase the likelihood of that individual being detained. And so the advice almost varies from locality to locality, and I think, local attorneys need to understand, ALA attorneys, what the practice is of their different jurisdictions in order to advise clients properly.
Ruby, do you see something different from your point of view in Houston?
I agree with Faye. This bill is going to be interpreted. There's going to be lack of uniformity in its interpretation, and there's a lot of different policies that are interpreted differently in different policies throughout the state. So I think it's going to be important for those practicing in Texas, have clients in Texas, to know the locale and how things are done from the local police with immigration and ICE, as well plug in with the local ALA section and the local nonprofits. There's a lot of great materials being produced between ALA, ACLU, IRLC, lots of different materials, and I think it depends on where the client lives and is working, and also what their status is. But it is important to be vigilant and stay on top of those things. And I mean, I think as ALA attorneys, we're keeping up to breast on this by preparing this CLE and listening, as well as doing Know Your Rights presentations and trying to keep that service of information provided to our clients on a regular basis.
And I think I would just comment that, the moments like this provide an opportunity to find strength in our communities. ALA is really only effective when we're the experts within our local communities. There are 900-plus members of the Texas chapter, but that's just a very small part of the Texas legal community even, and this is a great opportunity to reach out at your local level and make ties with lawyers who may not have had to consider immigration issues nearly as much before. I think it's just the criminal defense bar. I think it's also civil litigators are increasingly going to see that, plaintiffs in lawsuits or witnesses or defendants, may be asked about immigration status, and so lawyers who are dealing with that may want to understand the contours of their client's status. Working within these communities to build up why bills like SB 4 are wrong, why they create a false sort of connection between immigration and criminality that all the studies have shown just doesn't exist. This is a another step in what I fear is going to be a long fight in changing hearts and minds about immigration in our country. Well, look, I'd like to thank Faye and Ruby for taking the time to join us to help enlighten us about SB4 and some of the ways in which we can be proactive about it. I'd like to thank everybody who's listening in, and this concludes our podcast.